Welcome to The Buzz. I'm Christopher Conover. This week, what it means for a community to become a town or city. Southern Arizona has more than 90 communities that may have a name, but they lack an official municipal government. Those ranks may drop by one in the near future. Last month, a group filed petitions that could lead to voters in Vail deciding whether or not to found a town government. AZPM's Hannah Cree brings us that story.
The city of Vail is having some growing pains. In 2000, the population was less than 3,000 people. But in the last 20 years, the population has exploded. And right now, Vail seems to be stuck in an argument over how to handle change. The question at hand? Whether Vail incorporates as its own town or stays an unincorporated community. The heated debate is more than obvious in the signs dotting every street corner. Anywhere a vote yes sign stands, another sign tells passerby to vote no. Backers of incorporation say about 21,000 people live within the boundaries of what would become the town of Vail. At a public meeting last month, Vail citizens like Joy Tucker voiced their concerns in the gymnasium of Cienega High School. Tucker is for incorporation and said a smaller local government will be more effective at addressing citizens' concerns than the Pima County Board of Supervisors.
It's going to be a small government that you can talk to. Right now, you've got to go all the way down to the Board of Supervisors, and there's only one guy who's paying attention to what's happening out here.
But when it comes to specific issues, the concerns voiced by Vail citizens this fall boil down to three main points: roads, taxes, and development. Vail is known for its rural areas and outdoor recreation, something that both sides say they want to protect. A Vail citizen that chose to be identified as Caitlin said she's seen rapid growth in recent years.
I moved here in the first 6 months, a whole community across the street, that open land was all built up.
Those for incorporation say doing so will give Vail more control over its land use, particularly in protecting certain beloved areas from commercial development.
If we had a town of Vail, we could preserve it. We can say to the guy who's on that dirt road, you can keep living like that. Nobody's stopping you. Well, you're protected now because you're in that area, because we've got these ordinances and this zoning. But if you don't have that, Who's to say the city of Tucson won't come through and just take you up and all of a sudden say you can't live in a mobile home anymore? That's a fire hazard.
However, those against incorporation, like Vail citizen Katie Breeding, say that staying unincorporated will protect the land from development. She thinks the proposed budget relies on too much commercial development, and that comes at a cost to the community's open spaces.
We're going to have to build on these areas that people enjoy their outdoor walks and hikes and everything on now.
Citizens are also concerned about paying the bills for a potential new town. Residents against incorporation do not want the proposed 2% sales tax.
If the budget is off, we would start in a debt. And so we would have to raise revenue. So we'll be paying 2% more in this economy to pay for any deficit.
Mariko Tippett, vice president of Incorporate Vail AZ, says that he does not see any increase in existing costs for residents. He says that since most Vail residents do their shopping in Tucson, they are already paying a 2.6% sales tax that doesn't go back to their community. He said that a 2% sales tax is reasonable compared to surrounding areas and that
all of those dollars would stay and remain in the town of Vail.
Road maintenance is another concern for both sides. Those for the incorporation of Vail are asking for wider, safer roads and updated speed limits. They also don't think their concerns are a priority to the county's regional transportation authority. Vail resident Callie Tippett.
With the amount of houses that have come in, road development just hasn't happened. Our roads need to be wider. We need more lanes to manage the capacity so that it's safe.
Vail resident Caitlin, who didn't want to give her last name, said when her family contacted the county in hopes of reducing the speed limit on a road by their house.
The county, it took them months to respond. And my husband had to communicate with them several times and they wouldn't respond. And finally, they said, oh, sorry, we're backlogged.
Others, such as Katie Breeding, say they don't see a problem with transportation services from the county.
I had a problem with the road work the other day. I contacted Pima County and I said, you guys are working on the road out here and it's not necessarily safe. And they're like, oh my gosh, we'll take care of that. I haven't had a problem with that.
Although anti-incorporation backers are vocal, Breeding says those on her side are not thinking all or nothing. They would rather have seen incorporation start small to ensure its success.
We feel this incorporation should have started much, much smaller and gain the trust of the outlying communities of Vail and then let those communities vote to be annexed in.
Despite the controversy, the issue appears set for the November ballot after the Incorporate Vail, Arizona initiative collected the necessary 2,500 signatures in less than a month. Vail's previous attempt to incorporate was in 2013, and it was defeated by nearly 10% of the vote. However, Vail's changing demographics could make this year the turning point. For The Buzz, I'm Hannah Cree.
We've heard about the debate on whether or not Vail should incorporate, but how exactly does it happen, and what does it mean to become a town or city? To answer that question, we spoke with Tom Belshi. He's the executive director of the League of Arizona Cities and Towns. Our conversation starts with him describing the difference between a town and a city.
The only real difference is that a city can adopt a charter, and that would be another 20-minute discussion, and towns cannot, but towns can do everything else that cities can do. A charter is basically like a constitution for the cities. It allows them to do some things and requires, in some instances, requires more of them, and in some instances, gives them more flexibility than state law does.
Right, and we've seen that with the city of Tucson, which is a charter city. The legislature has tried to pass over the years a handful of things regulating what goes on in the city of Tucson, and the city of Tucson has gone to court and waived the charter and said, no, sorry, and has generally won those.
That is true, and it's usually based on whether or not there is something that that the state legislature considers to be a statewide issue. And so if they consider it to be a statewide issue, they'll say, since it applies to all the cities, it doesn't matter whether you have a charter or not. But the real decision on whether that's true or not lies with the court. And that's why you'll see some court decisions based purely on whether this is a charter issue or whether it's a statewide.
We should stop the charter discussion there, because as you said, we can go 20 minutes down the charter road, and that's not what we're here to do today. So an unincorporated area decides it wants to become a city or a town. How does it do that?
Incorporation is based on registered voters getting together and saying, we want X area to become a city or town. And some people believe that, you know, what everybody thinks that, you know, when people talk about Vail or when they talk about Santan Valley, the borders mean something different to everybody. So the process of incorporation is saying, here is a boundary that we've drawn on a map, and we're calling it, you know, in this case, we're talking about Vail. So in Vail, we want to draw the boundaries in this way, and the registered voters within the community will decide whether or not it becomes a city or a town. There's two ways you can do that. You can, if you get 10% of the registered voters that live within the proposed boundaries, then it goes to a vote. And if the majority of the people voting at the election vote for it to be incorporated, it becomes incorporated. There's also a process by which you can do a 2/3 of the registered voters signing a petition. Then it immediately goes to the Board of Supervisors for them to make the final decision. Now, after the voters have voted, it's a formality, but it always ends up with the Board of Supervisors. So
at the League, you work with all 91 cities and towns in Arizona. What's the advantage for an area, be it Vail, Santan Valley, or some other place, to go from unincorporated to incorporated, be it as a city or a town?
I go all around the state talking to areas that want to incorporate. And one of the things that I tell them is that the desire to incorporate is very personal. Because normally what it's around, and again, when I say this is a point of view that I hear about different levels of government. We are not here as cities and towns to say anything bad about the counties or about the state or anything like that. But sometimes people in an area, they say, well, we want more say over planning and zoning and how things are developed, or we want a greater degree of police service, or our roads, we would like to have more control over what roads are getting maintained and when. They want a greater degree of control. Also, they're aware that there is state shared revenue available for them to do those kinds of things. although a city can't run 100% on shared revenue, the fact that all 91 cities and towns now have a sales tax in place, a local sales tax, is evidence of that. When I get asked, am I going to pay more taxes? The answer is yes, because eventually they're going to put a sales tax in place. And that is usually related to the level of services that they want to receive. So they're willing, you know, to have that put in place.
So that control, that greater degree of control, as you mentioned, police, zoning, roads, all kinds of things. Is there a specific list of what an incorporated area must handle? Or is that something that once an area incorporates, it goes and negotiates, for lack of a better term, with the county board of supervisors?
There are three things that our city is required to do when they incorporate. Number one is police protection. Now, people ask me, well, don't you mean public safety? No, it's police protection. Normally, in order to have home insurance, you have to have some type of fire protection. So it's either a fire district or it's, you know, a private fire company such as Rural Metro. Same with police. Normally what ends up happening is the new community basically contracts back with the sheriff's department in the beginning. It may be a number of years. That is, you know, that is something that the community isn't really ready to do right away. Number two is roads. All of the county maintained roads within the incorporated territory now become the responsibility of the city. Again, here's another instance. They usually will contract in the beginning with the county public works division in order to take care of that. And then finally, there's administration, which is they have to have a presence. It's usually a clerk. And that in the beginning is a lot for the posting of city and town council meetings, the minutes. When people eventually run for council, they will have packets that they have to get people to sign their petitions. There's also liability insurance. Unfortunately, when you become a government, you get sued. So you have to have liability insurance, development services. Even though you're not a part of the county anymore, there's still people who have property that they want to develop. You have to have somebody at the city that takes care of that. Those are the basics that they have to do. The issue is, you know, people know what other cities and towns are doing. And so they may choose, I want to have, you know, parks and recreation. I think we ought to have our own fire department, although that happens very infrequently. All of those things, you know, come at a cost and they're part of a budget. And so that's when they make decisions about whether it's going to be more costly or not. If I'm a homeowner that doesn't care about any of those things, I may not like the idea of incorporation, right? So that's what I mean when I say it's very personal. And we don't encourage or discourage anybody to incorporate. We just want to make sure it's very important to the cities and towns that people get the correct information.
So I have to ask, and we'll use Vail as the example because they will be on the ballot this November for this. So let's say hypothetically it passes and Vail becomes the next incorporated part of Arizona. 10 years from now, the people of Vail say, boy, that was a mistake. We never should have done that. Can they unincorporate and go back just to the county? And has that ever been done?
It has never been done. But there is a process for it. It's called disincorporation. And basically, it's that is driven, again, by the registered voters. And it's the same way you have, there's a petition process. I'm not as familiar with that as I am with this because we've never had to do it. And so I've never had to really study up on it. But there is a process to do that. And we've had cities that have struggle financially. We never had any city go bankrupt. We've had cities that will struggle for a variety of reasons. An excellent example is those communities that are in the copper corridor. You know, when the mines shut down, that's always a difficult thing for them because many people are employed with that. And, you know, they use that money to buy things locally with the sales tax. And so it just has a ripple effect. But yeah, that is the process. If they found that they've made a mistake and they want to, there is a disincorporation process.
All right. Well, we'll just let that leave where it is, since it's never been done. Thank you for spending some time with us.
You're welcome. And just want to say that for those people who haven't made up their mind, they're going to have a meeting in October, and the league will have someone there answering questions. We're always happy to help, and we'll be there to help if they do become incorporated.
That was Tom Belshi, Executive Director of the Arizona League of Cities and Towns. The community of Green Valley is almost 60 years old, according to the Green Valley Chamber of Commerce. That means most of its current residents were teenagers when homes began being built there. But it has remained unincorporated for the whole time. To learn how people there ensure they receive services without having a municipal government, we spoke with two members of the Green Valley Council, President Debbie Kenyon and Executive Director David McAllister Romo.
The Green Valley Council is the community voice for the homeowners associations in Green Valley. And Green Valley, in a nutshell, is a community of homeowners associations. It's not a retirement community. It's a community of retired people who live in 100 individual homeowners associations. And 50 years ago, this past June, the original six decided that they needed a unified voice in Pima County at that point in time, and formed the Greater Green Valley Coordinating Council to represent them at all matters up in Pima County and at the state level. So we have morphed over the 50 years to representing, for a very modest fee, we represent 80% of the homeowners associations here in Green Valley.
So when you go up to the Pima County Board of Supervisors or up to the legislature, or you meet with the delegations when they're down here, or maybe even the congressional delegations or members, what are the things you're pushing for, that type of thing?
So we are contracted with Pima County, but like Debbie said, we've grown over the years to really function at a higher level. So we now represent Green Valley at the local governmental level, county, state, federal, and tribal. And really what we do is a lot of our function is almost to serve as the eyes and ears. So we are the voice in Green Valley in that we work with the community, we work with our community service organizations, with our first responders. We looked at the needs, the unmet needs here in Green Valley, and that's what we communicate. So when we meet with congressional representatives, when we meet with the state representatives, it really is about getting the resources and the services that we need here in Green Valley. And that's really what one of the more important roles that we serve here in Green Valley.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It sounded like you're the unofficial government without the taxation and things like that.
Right. We have been referred to as the organization that has absolutely no authority but wields incredible influence. And that's what we do. We are the voice. So we interface on six different departmental levels with Pima County monthly. We have a volunteer auxiliary sheriff's department here. So we have a substation right behind us. They have 25 personnel. They are aided and abetted by a 100-person auxiliary force that owns their own building on county property, that owns the 10 vehicles. They patrol on the road 7 days a week. So they provide about $1.8 million of support services to Pima County, to the Sheriff's Department. What is most unique about Green Valley is, even though David is paid administrative staff here, everybody else in all of these organizations are volunteers. And that is how Green Valley exists, is on volunteers.
I'm sure somebody listening to this will say, who doesn't live down here in Green Valley, will say, well, they're so close to being an incorporated town or city. Why not just do it? But at the same time, it sounds like you don't need it.
That's where we're at right now. Green Valley, we all went through a very, very difficult time with COVID. And we came out of the pandemic as we were just starting to open up. I had just taken office, and we were all in the inoculation stage. And the supervisor, our District 4 supervisor, Mr. Christie, called and asked if we could do a Zoom conference. He says, I'm getting hundreds of calls every day from your residents asking where they can go to get a shot, because the only place we could go was up in Tucson. So we convened an emergency team, and in less than 5 weeks, we had two shot clinics here in Green Valley and inoculated 2,982 people. 4 weeks later, we did the second shot. You know, we pulled it together, and it was volunteer effort.
And I think that's really indicative of Green Valley. We have a culture here where people, they want to get out. They like to do for themselves. They like to do for their neighbors. They like to do for others. The spirit of volunteerism is very strong here. And, you know, like you said, we don't really see a need for additional, you know, the talk of incorporation in Green Valley comes up almost on a cyclical basis. So every 5 to 7 years, we start to see some people asking, you know, have we explored this? And we said, yeah, we've explored this. You know, because the Green Valley Council has been in existence for over 50 years, we have quite a detailed historical archive. And we have marketing materials from back in the 70s that said, should we incorporate? But I think, you know, the taxation and the financial considerations aside, we wouldn't really be getting any additional services. The council, I think we take a lot of pride in really doing our work so that we're represented, so that our voice is heard, you know, within the state, within the county, to where we get our needed services and our needed support. Part of our culture is we really like the fact that we kind of govern ourselves. We're very independent. We're not encumbered by a lot of the bureaucracy that we see traditionally with many municipal governments. You know, we're very resident-driven. We're very volunteer-driven. And it's very unique that if you're a resident of Green Valley, you can actively participate in the governance of your community. And so I think that that's something that people relish and people really, really like.
And it sounds like just my experience over the years hearing about Green Valley, as you said, Mr. Christie got 100 phone calls from Green Valley, was very responsive. I know our congressional delegation over the years I've been in Southern Arizona, they always swing through Green Valley if they know what's good for them. Same, and you have members of the legislature. It sounds like you're not hurting for
92% of voters, of voting populace votes in every election, be it a primary, whatever, 92%. And that carries a lot of weight. We ask our representatives to be cognizant of the fact, one, that one, we are voters, but we're an aging population. And there are some unique features that belong to an aging population. You know, we need a plethora of medical services, and we need activities, and we need safety, we need security, and right here in the community and the way that we're set up, we meet those needs right now. We have our own fire district right here. We have a substation here of the sheriff's department. They are subsidized by the auxiliary. We have the council here. So, you know, we're kind of the hub of all of these independent agencies.
It really sounds like Green Valley has figured out the problems that I've heard from other unincorporated areas. Oh, sure, the sheriff's department covers it, but there aren't a lot of deputies. They're stretched pretty thin. The fire department's here, but maybe it's rural metro or it's a very large fire district and it takes a while to get here. It sounds like Green Valley's gotten it figured out.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt. I think the reason behind that is that we are a community of homeowners associations. So when there's a Green Valley issue, we get on the phone to the county department head. We have this problem. So if you're calling and you live in another unincorporated, you're a resident, but you're calling into a department. And the difference is that we interface directly with those departments. We have a system here for service requests that if you have a road issue, if there's an issue in the wash, if there's an issue at the parks, you call our office, you go on our website, you submit the request that's needed. The county has 30 days to respond to us. And we do a detailed closeout on all of these requests monthly. That's something that doesn't happen at any other community. You know, it's a different climate. It's a different culture.
I was just going to say that. I think it's the culmination of the 50 years that we've built here in Green Valley. Over those 50 years, we've always looked to grow partnerships, to strengthen partnerships. And I think that it's through our work over the last 5 decades that we've finally gotten to a point where people acknowledge us and they recognize us. And I think that that's something that we take a lot of pride in, that we've worked very hard to do. And I think that when we're able to do that, but also work in partnership with so many of these agencies, there's a great deal of reciprocity. They know that we're not going to just arbitrarily, you know, ask for things that are way outside the scope or things that we don't need. They know that when we come to them, it's for a realistic need that we can back up. It's a legitimate need. It's something that we see in our community, and it's something that they understand that we need to work together to resolve. And we've had a lot of success in doing that.
Well, thanks for sitting down with us and explaining how this works. I think people are going to be surprised to hear about the organization and that it does work.
Well, thank you for coming to Green Valley.
Thank you so much.
That was David McAllister Romo and Debbie Kenyon with the Green Valley Council. And that's The Buzz for this week. You can find all our episodes online at azpm.org and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcast. Just search for The Buzz Arizona. We're also on the NPR app. Zach Ziegler is our producer with production help from Desiree Tucker. Our music is by Enter the Haggis. I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for listening.
Arizona Public Media's original programming is made possible in part by the Community Service Grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.